Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
WikiLeaks tells us the locations of U.S. nuclear weapons in Europe. Benjamin Netanyahu's behind-the-scenes position on land for peace. How Hillary Clinton mocked India's bid for permanent U.N. Security Council status. China's frustrations with its purported ally, North Korea. How the Saudi king says the Pakistani president is bad for his country. How Arab governments allied with Israel, though they never put it that way, in wanting the U.S. to attack Iran. How hard it is to get other countries to take Gitmo detainees. Former CIA agent Bob Baer is with us now. These days he is Time Magazine's intelligence columnist and the author of two books on Middle East espionage, See No Evil, The True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War on Terrorism, and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude. We'll get his take on the ramifications of all this as the WikiLeaks information bomb continues to explode on every continent. Hi, Bob. Thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start here. From the Jerusalem Post, quote, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu supports the concept of land swaps and does not want to govern the West Bank, according to a cable from the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv released by WikiLeaks. In a meeting with Senator Benjamin Cardin, Democrat from Maryland, in February 2009, before President Shimon Peres asked Netanyahu to form a coalition, the Likud party leader outlined his plans for, quote, economic peace with the Palestinians, which would give them a viable alternative to radicalism, his word. So is this new to you about Netanyahu, whose reputation is that he's against land for peace deals?
That's completely new to me. I'm not a total expert on the West Bank and Jerusalem and Likud party politics, but I can assure you this, is Netanyahu expected these communications to be private. These were his ultimate positions, and what he was telling the various political parties in Israel was something different from what he was telling the U.S. Embassy. This is the way diplomacy is conducted. Is you stake out a position in Washington, and then you try to make it happen in your country. So I don't care what the Israelis say today, that's nothing new, or it's not important, or, you know, however they're playing this. It came as a shock to Netanyahu. But more than that, it's the credibility of the United States. Diplomatic channels have always been secret in history, and they always will be. There is no American exceptionalism in any of this. And now we've destroyed this in overnight. It's incredible.
You sound upset about it, are you?
I'm terribly upset about it. What we did to Saudi Arabia or what we did to China, we depend upon China to deal with North Korea in all senses. The Chinese in particular demand secret communications. There's just no way that we are going to recover from this anytime soon.
Well, you say recover. Let me go down the list of a few of these and see if there might be some positive implications of having not so much our government, but mostly other governments' positions actually outed. So, for example, with this revelation about Netanyahu, could this improve the chances for Middle East peace in the near term?
It's going to make it more difficult because Netanyahu simply cannot trust the ambassador in Tel Aviv. At this point, the president can send an emissary from Washington, carry messages verbally back and forth. But if you were Netanyahu, would you ever now go to the ambassador and say what your true position is if you wanted to keep it secret until a later date? Outing somebody like Netanyahu today will cause him to go back on positions or will allow his opposition to build against him. This is what's going to happen, and he's going to have to backfill for this.
What about with respect to Iran? And I realize I left out one of your book titles, which is The Devil We Know, Dealing with a New Iranian Superpower. WikiLeaks may be out to harm the United States, but maybe the U.S. looks pretty good here, especially with respect to Iran, because Arab governments are revealed to be more hawkish on Iran than the U.S. even was over the last few years, but hiding their true fears behind their anti-U.S. and anti-Israel rhetoric. So if we now know that Saudi Arabia and Bahrain were actually imploring the United States to attack Iran. Does this make it harder for Ahmadinejad to pursue his nuclear weapons program?
Well, you know, I would take it to the point where when you're dealing with the Gulf sheikhdoms, you're also dealing with the street. They're authoritarian regimes, of course. But the fact is they do have to answer to a certain constituency, and that certain constituency says that Israel is the main enemy and not Iran. And what we really want to do to get to the Arabs is get overflight permission to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, if it comes to that. Now, how are we going to do that now when the Saudis no doubt have sent somebody to Tehran by now saying this position was overstated, no, we didn't meet it with the Americans? Again, we go back to American credibility has been undermined in the Gulf, and the Arab Gulf states are saying, now, what are we dealing with in Washington if they're putting their diplomatic cables on the Internet? I mean, obviously, we didn't do it, but the point is we didn't go out of the way to keep this stuff private.
How about
so
that?
I don't see any benefit in any of this.
How about the Saudi government's two-faced position being outed to their people? I understand what you're saying about the street. The public considers Israel a bigger threat than Iran. I think that's in part because of the cycle of the Saudi government and other Arab governments using Israel as a distraction from their real problems, including their own, you know, autocratic governments. But now that it's been outed that they really are worried about Iran, could this actually change public opinion, change the public discussion to the extent that there is public discussion in Saudi Arabia?
I don't think so. I think what it undermines the credibility of those regimes. It shows them to be two-faced. The way their opponents will paint it is that they're pawns of the United States. They do our bidding, especially in the stuff about Yemen, about the Yemeni president, Ali Saleh, saying that I'll take claims for this. And we all sort of knew it was Americans flying the Predators over Yemen. But the fact that he's laughing about it in the meeting, it just doesn't help. It just doesn't help in the sense that, you know, we have to let these countries manage their own people, and we really can't get involved. I just don't like any part of the. I mean, I like these leaks because I'm a journalist now, mm-hmm. and I understand American foreign policy, and as an American, I like the openness. But I know what the State Department is facing today is a crisis. I was talking to him yesterday, a total, complete crisis. They're totally consumed with this, explaining this. Governments all across the world, even our allies, are absolutely furious about these leaks. You know, it's Americans just don't like secret diplomacy, but unfortunately that's the way the world works. So if we reveal these secrets, it's an enormous expense to our national interest.
I don't know if you... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I write books about this stuff, but my opinions are my opinions, and they're not the opinions of the government, and they're fairly irrelevant when I write my books. But when it's out in black and white in these cables, the duplicity, and duplicity on our part as well, it doesn't serve anybody's interests.
Listeners, want to talk to Bob Baer this morning, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, about the right or wrong or potential damage or good that these WikiLeaks are doing, or about some of the particular situations, so many fascinating world dynamics released here for us to now talk about now that they are known, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Jack Schaefer on Slate is even speculating that Secretary of State Clinton could be forced to resign over this, that it's so embarrassing and such a failure of security. Do you think that's even remotely possible?
Well, she's not responsible. I mean, what happened was that after 9/11, the military demanded, said, well, listen, if we're going to be in, I think it was a military leak, if we're going to be in the Middle East, we need to know what's going on diplomatically. But what the military can't handle is you know, giving secrets like this to privates and corporals and the rest of it, who shouldn't really be have security clearances and incapable of locking the hard drives on their computers. This was the mistake. It was this military engagement in the Middle East just sort of opened the floodgates. You know, normally cables like this just go between an embassy and a couple other major embassies in Washington. And even at that, some of them in the old days, I'm sounding very old now, used to be called no dis or no distribution, especially with heads of state. So the ambassador would sit down with the head of state, and get back from the meeting, write up a message to the Secretary of State, and went directly to the White House. And that was the way things used to be done. But this openness inside the State Department, you know, started after 9/11 under the Bush administration.
Well, some people are saying this was a result of learning how little communication there was between agencies before 9/11 that helped contribute to, you know, 9/11 being allowed to take place when the suspects were under, when some of the perpetrators wound up being under the government's noses, but the FBI wasn't sharing with the CIA and vice versa. Do you think this came from an excess of responsiveness to that problem?
I think it probably did, but we have to remember that the important thing for police, the FBI, and the CIA is to share tactical information, which is rarely leaked out because it's not politically sexy like these cables are, and that's where the sharing should be, not on policy. It doesn't matter to the FBI agent in Minneapolis what the Saudi king is saying about Iran. He just doesn't care. If the Saudi king were to offer tactical information, yes, that should, but he wouldn't, but that should go to the FBI. But this sort of general policy stuff is much more sensitive and much more likely to appear on the front pages of the New York Times.
Former CIA agent Bob Baer, now Time Magazine's intelligence columnist, and we'll get to your many calls for him in a minute. Our lines are full, folks, so wait till people finish up now. I just want to follow up on what Jack Schaefer has just written on Slate about Hillary Clinton. His argument is, and I haven't seen this from anyone else, but Jack Schaefer says no matter what sort of noises Clinton makes about how the disclosures are an attack on America and the international community, as she did today, she's become the issue. She'll never be an effective negotiator with diplomats who refuse to forgive her exuberances. And even foreign diplomats who do forgive her will still regard her as the symbol of an overreaching United States. Diplomacy is about face, he writes, and the only way for other nations to save face will be to give them Clinton's scalp. Any reaction?
I don't think it's her fault. I mean, I think she's turned out to be a fairly good Secretary of State. She's trusted by foreign leaders. You know, she's grown in the job and she's a lot better. I think it's a fairly common reaction to blame the person at the helm. You know, someone should be accountable in Washington. Now, whether it's head of information at the Pentagon was responsible for these cables, or the Secretary of Defense, or Secretary Clinton. We need somebody in Washington to respond to crises, and someone has to be fired, like after Pearl Harbor. You know, we got to get back to that. Come on.
Phil in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Phil. You're on with Bob Baer.
Yes. My argument would be that I think the opaque manner in which diplomacy has been carried on all this time has not worked. And perhaps transparency would be a better policy so people can see what is happening. Because you have a world at the brink of war, and everyone's at each other's throats, so I don't see what's been accomplished by all the secrecy.
Yeah, what if, Bob, what if the cable about the Saudi king's comments before the Iraq war were known at that time, when he was warning the Bush administration that going to war against Iraq would hand Iraq to Iran by empowering the Shiites there, and that would be a bigger problem. For example,
well, you know, that is a good argument, and I'm going to have to concede that one. Yes, I wish there had been the Arabs had come out, you know, gone after Washington for this, expressed its doubts, and that might have slowed the Bush administration down. But now we're talking about a secret attack on Iran. Problem.
What about the attack on Iran yesterday, by the way, on some, were they both nuclear scientists?
Oh, I think this is the Israelis doing that.
You do?
I do. I can't imagine who else it would do that would have an interest or that was sent in.
Two atomic bomb experts assassinated, basically, on the streets of Iran. Do you think, then, that the timing is no coincidence, if it is Israel, saying, you know, okay, this is all out there now. Now we know the whole world wants an attack to stop Iran's nuclear program. Now we can do this with impunity. You think that's what happened here?
Well, I think it's a good attack, you know, going after the
substitute. Sorry, you broke up for just a second. You think it's a what?
It's a good substitute for the attack. Hey, Brian?
Yeah.
Could I call you back on another phone?
Sure. All right, okay. So we're gonna get Bob Baer back on another line. Bob Baer, author of The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, See No Evil, The True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War on Terrorism, and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, all three of those books written by this former CIA agent, now intelligence columnist for Time Magazine, and he'll get right back on the phone with us as we continue to talk about WikiLeaks. Mashkur in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Mashkur.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, thank you for calling.
Yes, I just want to say, you know, I'm not going to give too much details, but I worked overseas in clandestine with the FBI, CIA, over in the Middle East, one of the Gulf Arab countries. What I realized is that when the FBI was targeting a particular subject, I come to find out that this individual that the FBI was targeting was actually a person working along with the CIA. The CIA didn't like the fact that the FBI was overseas investigating a person who was actually an informant for them. And what happened is that, you know, this whole big issue is a dangerous issue that the CIA and the FBI has been playing for a long time. This is a bubble that has been floating out there for a long time. It's just popped. It's exposed now. This is not by accident, this WikiLeaks. This thing is actually done on purpose, and probably because of it, is going to strengthen the relationship between the Bureau and the CIA. This is not an accidental thing. The government don't let nothing happen that it don't want to happen.
Mashkur, thank you. And Bob Baer, who's back with us now, I presume you don't agree with that, that this was done by the government because it's actually going to strengthen the relationship between the CIA and the FBI.
No, I mean, you know, I'm out of the government for 13 years, so I'm a bit dated, but let me tell you this. The government's credibility, in my eyes, is coming apart very, very quickly. It really does seem to be slipping back into, I don't know what, into chaos. And the problem between the CIA and the FBI is they don't share computer databases. They do not have a Google-like system where an FBI agent, again, in Minneapolis, could put a name in and find out that there's a CIA file. He doesn't need to actually see the file, but he just needs to know it's there so he can put in a request to see it. There's all sorts of ways to do this, but Washington, there's a gridlock there, and this just doesn't work. I mean, we have not seen more efficiency in the government since 9/11. We've seen less efficiency, and that's fairly clear, you know, reading the press.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Bob Baer. Hello.
Yeah, hi, how you doing? It's great to be on. I guess I had two questions, and, you know, really was wondering, we've known this was coming for so long. I can't believe that America, with all its, you know, technological abilities, couldn't prevent this from happening. I mean, why, you know, didn't we find ways of shutting down, you know, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks when we knew this was in the pipeline years ago? And I think, you know, had this happened back in the 70s in the Cold War, I mean, this guy probably would have been taken out. And if we were any other country, this would have, you know, been done quietly, and this wouldn't even be an issue anymore. And I just, if it's such a you know, a major impact on our foreign policy, then, you know, why didn't we just act on this and just get it over with, I guess? And I speak from someone who had a family member in government, and, you know, were she still there and this affected her, you know, all they would have had to do is give me a gun and I would have gone and done it myself.
Well, you know, you're talking about assassinating somebody who puts information out, not a warrior in any traditional sense. And I would suspect, Bob Baer, that if it wasn't Julian Assange, it would be somebody else, and that this is really a function of today's technology as much as anything else. It is WikiLeaks, after all. and that this is not really so much about him as an individual, even though he obviously is responsible for his actions.
He's responsible, and he's wrong to do it. I mean, this is not going to improve the world, these leaps, in any sense, I don't believe. What the problem is that information technology, it's well known that you, in the government, if you have anything above confidential, that you put a lock on the hard drive of a computer. Secondly, you monitor usage of every computer in the government. There are software programs to do this, and if somebody's downloading a 250,000 documents onto a USB port, it sets up a red flag. This should have been caught early on, and it wasn't. It was just pure incompetence. I mean, the CIA today, as well as the FBI, locks their hard drives. There's simply no way to get into cables except on a need-to-know basis, and that should be the way things work. Now, you know, I'd like to go back to, I mean, the whole idea of you know, Congress is the one that should be monitoring this stuff. The committees should be doing this. This is the real weakness in all of this. So let's go back to the Iraq war. If Saudi Arabia is complaining about the invasion of Iraq, this should have been brought up in congressional committees and then brought up with the president. There are ways to vet information like this and look at it aside from the White House.
Before you go, can you weigh in from your perspective on the journalism element here? Because the chain of custody of this of these documents is presumably from this private Manning, this Army private, allegedly, to WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks to five selected news organizations around the world, the New York Times in this country, The Guardian in the UK, and a few others. And then the news organizations have to decide what to do with it. And the New York Times has its lead editorial today on the WikiLeaks that they are publishing extensively, and it says the claim by Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton that the leaks threaten national security seems exaggerated. The documents are valuable because they illuminate American policy in a way that Americans and others deserve to see.
I don't think the New York Times can make that call. I mean, it was the New York Times that said, let's invade Iraq. I mean, are they really capable of deciding what's a secret and what's not? I happen to have supported the Pentagon Papers being leaked because it was pure policy manipulation and lies and did not affect individual relations abroad. It didn't affect, or you know, what we call sources and methods. So I was very supportive of the Pentagon Papers, but this is different. And I just don't think that Assange, the New York Times, me, or anybody else can decide what's a secret and what damages U.S. national security, except the executive branch, in consultation with Congress. So the Constitution, you know, it works in that sense.
But Max Frankel, who was executive editor of the Times at the time of the Pentagon Papers, is quoted, I think I have this roughly right, saying, you know, left unchecked by an aggressive media, the government will trend toward classifying everything secret.
Yeah, it's a balance that goes back and forth. And, you know, it's really history is going to judge whether a leak needed to be. My immediate reaction to the WikiLeaks is that most of this stuff didn't serve anybody's interest and should have been kept secret. You know, time will tell, as I say, and you know, we won't know for another 10 years.
Do you think that you're in a different place on this than many of your colleagues at Time Magazine, or haven't you been asking around?
Oh, I'm sure I'm in a different place. Remember, I'm 21 years in the CIA.
Right.
I tend to value secrets more than most people. But on the other hand, I probably distrust the federal government more than most at the same time. I know where things go bad and where they don't. So I do have a peculiar view.
Bob, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your views with us.
Thank you.
Bob Baer, former CIA agent, now intelligence columnist for Time Magazine, author of books including See No Evil, The True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War on Terrorism, Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. We also have a WikiLeaks poll on our website right now. Do you think the WikiLeaks release is good for democracy, dangerous and unnecessary, or it's complicated? Let us know your opinion in our thoroughly unscientific online poll at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, where you can also keep this conversation going. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll have a Three Flags call-in on the elections this weekend in Haiti, Egypt, and the Ivory Coast. Stay tuned.